Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1939. Makers of Maxwell House Coffee welcome you to another hour of entertainment brought to you by the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios in Hollywood. With the regular Good News cast, plus tonight's guests, Robert Taylor and Lionel Barrymore. And here is your host for the evening, Robert Young.
Thank you, Warren. And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We have assembled what I think is a very unusual show for you tonight, and I hope you like it. You'll be entertained by all the Good News gang, Fanny Bryce and Hanley Stafford, Frank Morgan, Gertrude Neeson, and Meredith Wilson. But we're going to devote almost the entire second half of our program to a dramatic presentation of the famous Broadway success, The Criminal Code, starring Bob Taylor and Lionel Barrymore with Rita Johnson. Some sort of grapevine must have spread the news about the show because I noticed a lot of other stars from the studio sitting in our audience. Meredith's going to start the show in just a minute, but right now, I call upon him to play a fanfare for the Good News program's favorite alumnus, Bob Taylor.
That's wonderful, Meredith. I never got anything like that when I worked here.
Well, that's only for visiting celebrities, Bob.
Oh, well, in that case, you certainly should play a fanfare for that distinguished gentleman, Lionel Barrymore.
No sooner said than done. Gentlemen, would you care to tell us something about the play you're going to do later?
Oh, I don't think we ought to do that, Bob.
No, we'll just sit down and enjoy the show.
Well, that's fine. Ladies and gentlemen, I know you're all going to enjoy it. So we'll let Meredith Wilson start us off with a new rhythm tune called This Is It. Meredith, this is it. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Fanny Bryce as Baby Snooks. Well, income tax day is drawing near, and Daddy, played by Hanley Stafford, is toiling over his report as his problem child enters, her school books under her arm. Here they are.
Hello, Daddy.
Oh, hello, Snooks. Don't disturb me.
What are you doing?
I'm trying to figure out my income tax. Now, go away.
What's income tax?
It's the money I have to pay the government.
Does the government pay you, Daddy?
No.
Why do you pay them?
Because I have to. Now leave the room and let me work on this. I have to send it away tomorrow.
Send it where?
To Washington.
George Washington?
No, Washington, D.C. Snooks, will you please go to your own room?
Can I do my homework here, Daddy?
Oh, all right. But don't make a sound. And don't ask me any questions.
Why?
Because I've got to add up this long column of figures.
All right.
Well, sit right there in the corner. Let me see. 8 and 7 is 15, and 6 is 21, 29, 32, 41, 48, 56.
60, Daddy! 4, 7,
what?
How much is 6 and 2?
I told you not to interrupt me. 6 and 2 is 8.
Did you tell me 4 and 4 is 8?
4 and 4 is 8, and 6 and 2 is 8, and 5 and 3 is 8, and so is 7 and 1 8.
Oh. Is everything 8?
No. And I told you to keep quiet.
All right, Daddy.
Now, where was I?
He was right here all the time, Daddy.
Oh, stop that. Now I've got to add up this whole column of figures all over again.
Why?
Because I want to know what to take off.
Are you hot?
No, I'm not hot.
Now, what are you going to take off?
I'm talking about my income tax.
Uh-huh.
There are certain deductions a married man may make. For instance, the government allows me $400 for you.
When do I get it?
Get what?
The $400.
Now listen, Snooks. I've simply got to fill out this tax blank tonight. If you make another sound, I'll give you a good spanking.
Oh, my darling.
Now remember, I don't want to hear another peep out of you. Not another peep, you hear?
Mm-hmm.
All right. 8 and 7 is 15, and 6 is 21, 29, 32, 41, 48, 56.
Peep!
Now, what did you do that for?
I couldn't help it, Daddy.
Will you please let me out of these figures, Snooks?
Mm-hmm.
8 and 7 is 15, and 6 is 21, 29, 32, 41, 48, 56, 64, and 8 is 72. Oh, my heavens. Now, what is it?
I want my $400.
It isn't your $400.
Well, whose is it?
Oh, Snooks. There really isn't any $400. The government just allows me to deduct it for you.
Why?
Because those are laws on which this country is founded.
Was it founded?
Yes.
When was it lost it?
Oh, what for you? 8 and 7 is 19. Now, what are you laughing at?
You said 8 and 7 is 19.
Well, isn't that funny? Now, what are you crying about? Well, keep quiet so I can add up these figures. You get me so mixed up, I don't know how much 2 and 2 is.
It's 4, Daddy.
I know it's 4! Now listen, Snooks. I'm going to add up these figures once more. And if you so much as breathe, I'll give you the spanking of your life. Is that clear?
Mm-hmm.
If you so much as breathe. All right. 8 and 7 is 15, and 6 is 21, 29, 32, 41, 48, 56... Snooks, what did I tell you?
I couldn't hold my breath any longer, Daddy.
Oh, Snooks, will you please let me finish?
All right.
8 and 7 is 15, 6 is 21, 29,
32. Daddy!
Oh, I thought I was beating the government when I had you. What do you want now? Oh, you do. All right. You really want to help me?
Yes, Daddy.
Very well. Take this ledger and read off the numbers to me so I can recheck them on my tax report.
All right.
And don't make any mistakes now, sir.
No, Daddy.
I don't want any trouble with the tax people.
No.
Go ahead.
18. 59.
31.
46.
92. 90, 60. 112.
94. 7. Snooks, what are you doing? I'm reading the
numbers, Daddy. Oh, you just won't let me get this done, will you? All right. Maybe they'll come and put me in jail.
Why?
For not paying my taxes. Everybody has to pay taxes. That's how they run the country.
Do you have to run it, Daddy?
No, but I contribute. My tax helps.
How?
Well, for instance, last week I sold a suit of underwear in the store.
A suit of underwear?
Yes. And part of the money I got for that underwear has to go for taxes.
Money from the underwear?
Certainly. How do you think the government manages to buy battleships? with the tax from my underwear. Mm-hmm. And if it wasn't for my tax, there wouldn't be any parks or mm-hmm. schools or public libraries. If the United States didn't collect that tax, they'd be completely ruined. Well, what are you laughing at?
It's a good thing you sold your underwear.
Say, Warren, I wish you'd been around just about this time last night. I needed you. Betty and I had some people for dinner, and when the coffee came on, they tried to see how much I really knew about it.
Well, you could handle that, Bob. Why did you need me?
Well, this friend told me how he'd heard us say that more and more people are finding pleasure and downright satisfaction in the new Maxwell House coffee. That more people are buying Maxwell House today than ever before in its history. And he asked me why. And that's when I wished you were at my elbow. I began by telling about the new blend.
What did you say?
Well, I told him how the Maxwell House people spent months experimenting with coffee from all over the world. How they finally found a way to make the famous Maxwell House blend even better.
Well, so far, Bob. That's why, of course, you notice at once that the new Maxwell House is even richer, smoother, more full of body than ever before. And then?
Well, then I told about the remarkable new gradient roast process. The way each coffee bean is roasted evenly all the way through.
Right, Bob. This amazing new method brings out the true, natural flavor of these superb coffees. With Radiant Roast, there's no chance of bitter coffee due to parching or weak coffee due to under-roasting.
Well, then I didn't do so badly, huh?
Oh, no, indeed, Bob. You can have my job any day. Well, friends, it's a fact that more and more people are enjoying the new Maxwell House coffee every day. So if you haven't tried Maxwell House lately, won't you order a pound tomorrow? It comes in the same familiar blue super vacuum can with all its marvelous flavor and fragrance sealed in, none wasted. With your very first cup, you'll see why the superb coffee is preferred by so many millions. You'll see why so many people agree the new Maxwell House is more than ever good to the last drop.
Ladies and gentlemen, we seldom give way to sentiment on our good news program, but tonight is a special occasion. Today is Frank Morgan's 25th wedding anniversary, and it is also the 25th anniversary of his first appearance on the stage. Frank, our congratulations to you and Mrs. Morgan, and many, many happy returns of the day.
Thank you, Bob. That's very nice.
In honor of the day, Frank, Meredith Wilson has a little surprise for you.
Oh, no, he shouldn't have done that. Meredith, you really shouldn't. I didn't want you to go out and... honestly, you... What is it?
Well, Frank, on behalf of myself and the orchestra,
yes?
We present a medley of tunes that were popular 25 years ago.
Oh, you're going to present a medley.
All right, fellas, hit it.
There for your
Heavens, do I go that far back? Well, then, anyway, it was very lovely, Meredith, but you really shouldn't have gone to all that trouble and expense. I mean, all that trouble.
Well, there's no trouble at all, Frank. I played it 2 years ago in San Francisco.
Oh. Well, I guess I'll be running along, fellas.
Oh, wait a minute, Frank. There's some presents for you.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, well, I can spare a minute.
Frank? On behalf of the makers of Maxwell House Coffee, I want to present you with a silver coffee service.
Oh, now, fellas, this is too much.
Let's hear the inscription on it, Frank.
Oh, yes, well, here it is. It's to Mr. and Mrs. Frank Morgan on their silver wedding anniversary from the makers of Maxwell House Coffee. The coffee that's good to the last drop, sealed in super vacuum cans to give you lasting flavor satisfaction, available in both the drip grind and regular grind, on sale at all food stores. Continued on the sugar bowl.
Here it is, Frank.
If you want to analyze the superb coffee flavor discovered by that master blender, Joel Cheek, make this simple nose test at your breakfast table. Take any other brand of... I can't read anymore, fellas. I'm overcome. What a beautiful sentiment.
Well, as long as you liked it so much, Frank, I'll admit I made up the inscription myself.
Well, nice work, Warren. That's very heartwarming in a blood-curdling sort of a way. Thanks, anyway.
Well, now, wait a minute, Frank.
What?
You know, we rib each other on the program here and insult each other, but I really have a very great regard for you.
Well, of course, Bob. And I think very highly of you, too.
Thanks. Well, anyway, here's a little silver trinket made up to celebrate the year of your 25th anniversary.
Oh, well, that's...
Go on, open it up.
Yes, I'll...
Read the inscription.
1939, United States of America, E Pluribus Unum, one dime. Young, when do you have your copper wedding?
Well, only a joke, Frank.
Oh, Frank, here's a little remembrance.
Oh, what do you got?
Here, Frank. It's a genuine Oriental bathrobe.
Oh, well, that's different. It's nice to know there's one fellow here with a little spark of real sentiment. It's a very lovely gift, and...
I thought you'd like it.
Yes, I... Meredith, you don't mind my asking...
No.
Well, how does it happen that on my silver wedding anniversary you decide to give me a rug?
It's full of silverfish.
Well, it serves me right for associating with a troop of tyros, theatrical termites. Frank Morgan, a paid-up member of the Lambs Club, a man who spent 25 years, a quarter of a century in the theater, the darling of Broadway, the toast of New York.
Out here, he's just a crumb.
Now, just a minute, young. I don't have to take
now,
this
take
kind of...
Take it easy, Frank. Take it easy. So you were in the theater 25 years, huh?
Yes, I've...
And you must be around 60 years old.
Young, it might you to know that on March 4th, I was exactly 33 years old.
You and Baby Snook.
Fanny, what... Well, never mind. Young, it might interest you to know that on March 4th, I was... Well, never mind. Those labored quips, Young. It happens that my first appearance on a legitimate stage was in the role of Little Lord Fauntleroy when I was 8 years old.
I see. Well, that makes you 33, all right.
That's
but
right.
This is your 25th wedding anniversary, too.
Yes, I...
Were you married when you were 8 years old?
Marriage anniversary. Yes, well, I was pretty big for my age. In fact, when I was 9, I played the giant in Jack and the Beanstalk.
Oh, I heard you were 14 before you learned to wave bye-bye.
Oh, cut it out, young. I'm going to start bringing a joke book to these programs.
You could use one.
Why, when I was 14, I headed my own stock company. We did 8 new plays a week for a whole season. Now, just think, Bob. In those days, I had the largest repertoire in the world.
Don't worry, it hasn't shrunk any.
Young, you're in fine fettle tonight.
I feel pretty good.
What I'm trying to make clear to you is that at one time, I knew by heart all of the principal roles of all of Shakespeare's plays in English, French, Turkish, and Arabic.
How's your Persian?
Fine. She had kittens yesterday. I used to be a rug salesman.
I know. I saw your picture in the rugs gallery.
I've been hamstrung by a string of hams. Meredith, I demand an apology.
Well, I'm sorry, Frank. I was just standing there admiring the way Bob makes those funny little remarks.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, I thought of one.
What are you laughing at?
Rugs gallery. That's pretty good.
I bet you were a whiz in front of the Mason City drugstore. Well, I didn't come here to be insulted by a flautist in spats. Here, take back your silver fish.
Oh, gee, Frank, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well,
tell us some more about how you played Shakespeare.
Well, my performances have been carefully analyzed by all the leading authorities on the Elizabethan drama. There's no need for me to go into detail, but I will say that my Othello was magnificent. The critics are still talking about my Hamlet, and I was sensational as King Lear. I mean, King Lear.
I heard you the first time. Well, Frank, if you got by in all those plays, you must have had a wonderful supporting cast.
On the contrary, I never used professional actors. Used to go on the road and pick up local boys and girls. Mostly girls. I trained them myself. I was so great, I didn't need any support.
Oh, no, Frank. You're really going too far.
Don't be silly, Young. I could take Romeo and Juliet and play it with Meredith Wilson.
Gee, I've always wanted to play Juliet, Frank.
Do you know the word, Meredith?
No.
All right. Take it from there, Belasco.
Well, Bob, no. There's a time and place for everything.
Come on, King Lear.
Well,
rip off a little Shakespeare with Meredith.
Oh, well, all right. Listen, Meredith, we'll do the balcony scene from Romeo and Juliet.
Do we need a balcony?
We don't need anything. I'm going to play Romeo so beautifully that all you have to do is imagine you're really Juliet. And when it's your turn to speak, I know you'll say the right thing.
I know I will.
Good. Now. The scene is the beautiful Italian garden of the Capulets. It's night, and Juliet looks down on the lovely scene from her balcony, her cheek lighted by the soft glow of the moon. Romeo enters. But soft, what light through yonder window breaks? It is the east, and Juliet is the sun. Arise, fair sun, and kill the envious moon, who is already sick and pale with grief. It is milady. Oh, it is me love. See how she leans her cheek upon her hand. Oh, that I were a glove upon that hand, that I might touch that cheek. But soft, she speaks.
Hello, Frank.
Oh!
Just a few moments, we will present one of the most important and thrilling dramatic playlets the Good News program has ever presented. Be sure and stand by for The Criminal Code, starring Bob Taylor and Lionel Barrymore with Rita Johnson. Warren, that wonderful fragrance of freshly made coffee tells me it's time for our familiar Thursday evening custom. A moment of relaxation over a steaming, friendly cup of the new Maxwell House coffee.
Right you are, Bob. And friends, we'd like to take an extra moment to seriously pay special tribute this evening to Mr. and Mrs. Frank Morgan on their 25th wedding anniversary and also the 25th anniversary of his first stage appearance. So join us now, won't you, in lifting high your cups of Maxwell House and wishing good luck to that grand star of stage, screen, and radio, Frank Morgan and his charming wife. And now, Meredith, a little mellow music.
for station identification.
KFI, Los Angeles. This is Bob Young again, and we continue our Good News Maxwell House program with a presentation of one of the most powerful dramas that has reached the New York stage in the past 10 years. Martin Slavin's exciting human story, The Criminal Code. Our production of this drama will star Lionel Barrymore as the warden, Rita Johnson as the warden's daughter, and here's Robert Taylor as the prisoner.
My name is Robert Grant. The guy there started getting fresh with her, and I didn't like it. I told him to lay off. One thing led to another. A fight started. I thought I saw him reach for a gun. And the next morning, I found myself in a district attorney.
Sit down, kid.
I'd rather stand, sir.
Ever been arrested before?
No, sir.
Well, Bob, you're in a jam.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that fella you conked, Parker, died this afternoon.
Died?
Yeah. Would you like a little drink, Bob?
No, sir.
Well, Bob, you can make a statement to me if you want to, but anything you may say may be used against you. I want you to understand that.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. It looks to me like the best thing for you to do is to come clean, plead guilty, and take your jolt. But your lawyer might advise you differently. Have you got a lawyer?
Well, the firm I work for sent a lawyer to see me this morning.
Oh, what did he say?
Told me not to talk.
Yeah, well, then don't say a word. You haven't said anything yet that'll do you any harm. All right, Mike. I'm through. Well, it's tough luck, Bob, but that's the way things go. That's the way they break sometimes. You have to take them the way they fall.
Yes, sir. Well, there wasn't much I could do. My lawyer made a deal with the district attorney for me to plead guilty to manslaughter. And then I went up for a 10-year stretch. 10 years. I stood it all right at first, but I guess it's true that something happens to a man in prison. I began to lose my appetite. Couldn't sleep. I went to see the prison doctor, a man named Reinwolf. He told me there was nothing wrong with me, that if I was outside, he'd send me to the seashore. So I went back to my cell. Jim Fales, my cellmate, was sitting on the floor.
What did the doc say, kid?
Nothing.
Oh, come on. Don't let these guys get your goat now, Bob. You smash up now, you're gone.
I know, but I can't. I can't go on.
Sure you can. You gotta grit your teeth and stick it out. Why don't you read something?
I don't want to read.
Well, who? You want to play a game of pinochle? Dominoes?
No. 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 I can't. I can't go on with it. I can't. I won't.
Let me out. Let me out. Let me out of here.
Stop that racket!
Quiet, you. Quiet. Steady now. Steady, I say. Not a word. They'll jerk you out of here and throw you in the cooler just that quick. Hush now, hush.
Who's that yelling? I want to hear no more of it.
Oh, boy, that was a close call. You got to pull yourself together, Bob.
Oh, I can't. I wish I was dead.
Right down. All the screws are tough today. I hear we got a new warden. Brady.
Brady?
Yeah, used to be the DA.
He's the guy that sent me up.
Why, that just... Quiet.
My name's Martin Brady. I used to be district attorney. Well, being a DA is a political job, naturally. If you're a good one in a big town, you might be governor or president if you're lucky. But I wasn't very lucky. And after a long term in the DA's office, I was paid off with an appointment to run the state prison. Made it nice for me, having a chance to see all the fellas I'd sent up there, right or wrong. Well, when I got over feeling disappointed, I got interested in the job of running a prison. I pitched in, tried to improve things a little. It was Dr. Reinwolf, the prison physician, that got me interested. Smart man. The first day I was up there, the doctor told me about a young prisoner named Graham, who he felt was breaking and losing his morale. He suggested I try an experiment and give the boy a change of occupation and environment. Well, I sent for the boy.
Number 23499, Warden.
Yeah?
Oh, this is the boy I told you about.
Yeah, oh, yeah, Doctor, that's right, that's right. Yeah. Your name's Robert Graham, huh? Did they ever call you Bob?
You hear the Warden talking to you?
Oh, take it easy, please. Well, Bob, I don't know what you're here for. These cards don't tell much of a story.
You sent me here.
Huh?
It's the Parker case, Mr. Brady.
Parker?
Yes, the young Parker that was killed 6 years ago.
Oh, yeah. I remember now. Well.
Hello, Father.
Oh, hello, Mary. This is my daughter, Dr. Reinwolf.
Oh, how do you do?
How do you do? And this...
Oh, this is Mr. Graham, number 23499.
I'm glad to meet you, Mr. Graham.
You, Miss Brady. From that moment on, I was a new man. Warden Brady made me his chauffeur, treated me like a human being. But it was Miss Brady who really made the difference. I didn't seem to mind prison at all. In fact, when Fales and some of the others invited me to join them in a break, I said no thanks. I was lucky because when they tried it, they were caught. Then one day, Miss Brady was going away for a week to visit some friends, and I went up to the warden's apartment to get a suitcase. The butler let me in, a convict named Galloway.
How's it coming, kid?
All right, Ned?
Pretty soft now, huh?
Better?
Yeah. Don't let these rats fool you, kid, just because you're sitting on a cushion now. They'd gaff you just that quick. Your friends are still inside.
Yeah, I know that, Ned.
Yeah. Well, don't forget.
I won't.
You know what they did with Fales and the others for that break?
No.
Solitary for 8 months. That's what they got. Somebody will get that dirty squealer.
Brunch?
Who else? There aren't walls thick enough nor guards enough to save his life.
I didn't know what he was saying there. They made him talk.
Well, I'm only tipping you there's something in the wind, so watch your step unless you want to get into a jam.
No, I don't, but...
What?
How?
When the time comes, just keep out of the way. That's all.
Yeah, I will. Thanks, Ned.
Nix, the girl.
Will you put these in my bag, please?
Yes. Will you be gone long?
Only a few days.
Oh.
Is there anything I can do for you?
No, thank you.
Anyone you'd like me to see for you?
There isn't anybody now. My mother died 3 years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know.
She used to come to see me every month until she died. It kept my courage up, something to look forward to. Afterwards, I began to slip, I guess. It's awfully hard to make yourself believe that it's worthwhile to try. And that's what you've got to do, a break.
Yes.
They all think they've had a rotten deal. That's all you hear. Bad luck, tough breaks. That's all they talk about. It gets under your skin in time and fills you up with bitterness and hate. That's all there is in here.
And are you bitter?
No, not now. I was, but... I seem to see more clearly. Now?
What?
I don't think I can put it into words, but... Well, you see, they've got laws in here, just like they have outside. Somebody's got to pay. That's at the bottom of it all. It may be wrong, but... Well, I guess we've got to make the most of it.
I see.
Most everybody's trying to do what seems to them right. Inside and out, I mean. They just think differently, that's all.
Yes. My father's trying to get you a parole.
Yes, I know. But it doesn't matter so much to me now.
Why do you say that?
I mean, if you stay here...
You don't mean that.
Yes, I do. It isn't like it was before at all. If I can see you every day, just see you. And when they lock me up at night, there's something to think about, to wait for till tomorrow. Well,
what will you do when you're free again?
Oh, I don't know. I thought about it a lot, too. Don't you think it'll make a difference to people?
What?
That I've been in prison.
It shouldn't.
No, it shouldn't, should it? When a thing's paid for, that should end it. But they don't think that in here. Would it make a difference to you?
I don't think so.
Well, I was glad tried to get my daughter away from the prison for a few days. The attempted break had made us all a little nervous. You could feel the tension in the air. I was worried about Runch, the squealer, so I made him my secretary where I could keep an eye on him. Runch?
Yes, sir.
Put these away.
Yes, sir.
Why are you trembling like that?
I don't know.
Oh, pull yourself together, man. There's 8 feet of stone wall between you and the yard, and an iron gate down there with guards on either side.
There's all the clerks and the attorneys, officer.
Well, you think it's likely they'll walk past the guards and climb my private stairs?
No, sir.
There's no one beyond there except my servants. You think they'd risk the easy jobs they've got, to say nothing of their necks, for you?
No, sir.
And the kid that drives my car, you're not afraid of him?
No, sir.
Well, then pull yourself together. No one can harm you here.
They'll get me, sir. They'll get me. I know they will.
How?
I don't know that. I wish I did. You've got to get me out of here. I'll beat it down to South America. I'll never come back here again. I swear I wouldn't, Warden. Give me a chance. A break. Oh. Hello, Graham.
That's all, Ron. You can go.
Yes, sir.
You told me to come back here after I took your daughter to the station.
Yeah. I want to talk to you. Sit down.
Thank you.
I'm trying to get you out of here.
Yes, sir, I know.
You've done 6 years out of your 10. Your record's clean. You're eligible for parole. I'm doing what I can to get you out. And if I... Do you hear anything?
I don't know. An airplane, maybe.
You're pretty bitter, aren't you?
No, sir. Not now.
So much the better for you. Most prisoners are, and then the fight goes on forever. You've only paid according to the law, that's all. A state's attorney has to fight like the devil for that. For every man he puts behind the bars, a dozen slip between his fingers. Well, that's all part of the game, and... Hey, what is that?
I think it's in the recreation yard behind the jute mill, sir.
Yeah?
A fight, perhaps.
Well, wait here till I come back.
What's that noise? What is it, Bob?
I don't know, Runch. A fight, maybe.
Fight? Why would they yell like that?
I don't know.
What are you backing away for? You think that touch of me is foul, you, huh? I never done you any dirt. You ain't got anything against me.
No.
Give me a step off, kid. They got me framed. Are they going to get me, huh?
I don't know, Run.
Don't lie to me. You're down there in the yard. You know what's going on. You're holding out on me. Why don't you show your eyes and look me in the face? Oh, give me a chance. A break. Go down and find out what they're yelling for.
I can't. He told me to stay here.
You're lying to me. Let's go downstairs. You might hear something. I can't stand waiting like this. Please, Bob. Please. I'd do the same for you. I'd do it for myself.
I stepped out in the corridor. Saw nothing. I couldn't have been out there 10 seconds. When I came back, Runch was nowhere in sight. I looked toward an alcove in a corner.
Galloway.
You.
You meddling fool. I told you to stay out of here. I wasted breath to warn you.
I couldn't go. The warden...
Never mind that. I ought to cut your throat to make it safe. You may be planted here for all I know.
No, I'm...
Hold up your head. Let me see your face. Look me in the eyes and tell me to... Quick. Quick, I say. Yeah.
What is it, man? What have you done to him?
Beat it, you fool. Get out. They're coming. Don't let them find you here, you dumbbell. Go on. I'm clearing out. You get out, too.
You sent for me, Warden?
Yeah. Come in, Bob. Come in. You didn't do that, did you? Kill Runch?
No, sir.
Yeah, I didn't think you did. It was a skillful, crafty trick. They cleared the way to both those doors. They knew the racket in the yard would draw that saphead off the outer gate. They thought of everything, except that someone like you might blunder into it.
Well, I couldn't go. You told me to stay here.
Yeah, that's right. I did. Who killed him, Bob? Who killed him?
I don't know.
Yeah? Well, I'm afraid you can't get away with that, my boy. I go out of this room and leave you here, and Runch is alive. And when I come back, you're still here, white as chalk, and Runch is dead. You knew that, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And you were in here when the man was killed.
No. No, I wasn't here.
What?
I wasn't here. I went...
Went where?
Nowhere.
Ah, what do you mean?
Nothing.
And yet you say you don't know who did it. You're lying, Bob. Lying to shield a murderer, a man who crept in here and with a knife struck down that poor defenseless creature.
I didn't kill him.
Oh, I know that,
Bob. I didn't even know. I wasn't even in on it. I'll swear to that.
Yeah, sure, Bob. I understand. But there'll be an inquest.
Inquest?
Yeah, sure, that's right. The long arm of the law will reach right through those gates. Well, what'll you say to the coroner's jury then?
Nothing.
Nah, you can't get away with that. They'll yank you out of here and put you in the county jail. They'll hold you as a nickel or something. You might get 10 or 20 years just for that.
But it isn't fair. It isn't just.
No, it's tough. Tough. But you see the way things lie. You better tell me, Bob.
But I can't do that. There's a law inside here, too. A man can do anything but squeal. He can't do that. I'll have to take my chance, I guess.
Chance? You've got no chance. You're in a net. You're caught. You've got to clear this up to save yourself.
I can't.
Oh, you're up against it, boy. You've got to tell. Now, come on. Who killed that man? Who killed him, Bob? Come clean now. Speak up. Who killed him? Well, just tell me where he came from, Bob. From there or there? Oh, you can't be doing any harm by that. It is just a detail I'd like to know. Oh, come on now, be reasonable. It won't be violating your code to tell me that much, Bob.
I don't know.
You'll trade your life away to live up to a code that's made by murderers and crooks to cheat the laws of honest men? You're not a crook. That's not your code.
It's all I've had.
The law of the land is your code, mine. Hold fast to it. You can't be faithful to both of them. Stick with the law. You're not a crook. Now, don't turn one now. Who killed that man? No.
I can't forget so quickly what I've learned in here. I can't do that. I think it's right, their code, for them. I can't go back on it, or them. I can't. I wouldn't be anything then, don't you see? Not anything. I'd be like Runch lying in there. No. No.
Gleason.
Yes, Steve. What does he say?
Nothing.
You mean he won't tell?
Yeah.
I know we can make him talk.
No, none of that. None of that. No, Eric. Now, look here. I'll give you one more chance. I'll have your parole here next week. You'll be outside these walls, free, you understand?
Yes.
Or you'll rot in here for 3 or 10 or 20 years. A rope around your neck, perhaps. The jute mill every day. Week in and week out. Year in and year out. But solitary's worse.
Solitary?
Yeah. No ray of light. No sound. Black emptiness. That's all.
Oh, God, no. No, for what? For what?
The prison rules. A prisoner must obey. Now, come on now. Who killed that man? Who killed that man? Think fast, Bob. Think fast now. Who killed him? I'll take him away. Put him in solitary. Lock him up. Well, I kept the boy in solitary for a week. I was only doing it to save him from himself. I hoped he'd crack, and yet at the same time, I admired him for not cracking. I didn't know what to do. And then Mary, my daughter, came back from a trip. And right away, she asked about Graham. I tried to stall her at first, but she insisted.
Where is he?
Well, he's in solitary confinement.
Solitary? But for what?
Well, technically, for an infringement of the prison rules. Practically, to save his life. perhaps.
Yes? Well, what good is it to save a man, Father, if you destroy him while you're doing it?
Yeah, that's right, Mary. I thought of that myself.
A broken thing. What good is that to anyone or to himself? Prisons are filled with broken men, with broken minds and broken souls, twisted and distorted. What good is it to save a man for that? He'd be better dead.
Yeah, I thought of that.
This man was clean and fine and straight. What would he be if you'd broken him?
Yeah, that's all right. I see your point, but what am I going to do? His parole's lying there. Well, I can't let him go.
You can. You must.
Oh, yeah? What would you do?
I'd set him free tonight.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're just a kid. You don't know anything about these things.
But I do. I do. I'd set him free, and then I'd fight for him.
Oh, yeah?
A man like you could find a way to save him. You know you could.
Oh, you're crazy, Mary.
I'm not.
Yeah, and what would they do to me for that?
What does it matter?
Matter? You don't know what you're saying, girl. They just bust me higher than a kite.
But if it's right, Father.
All right. Say, what is this? You talk as if I'd done a crime myself.
You will be if you don't.
Oh, you don't know what it means. I've done the best I could for him. I'm through. I'm done. The law must take its course.
No. No, you can't do that. You can't.
Say, look here. What's gotten into you? What do you mean? What's back of all this stuff?
I love him, Father.
Huh? Is that on the level, Mary?
Absolutely on the level.
Well, why didn't you tell me that in the first place?
I wanted you to do it because it was right, not just for me.
Yeah, I see. How long has this been going on?
It hasn't gone on at all. He's never said a thing to me, but I read it in his eyes. That's why I went away, to find out just how much I cared and whether it would make any difference to me that he'd been in prison.
Yeah.
And I know now that it doesn't. Oh, I'm sorry if it hurt you, Father, but...
No. You can't help that, Mary. Love, you have to take it when and where it comes. I guess that's one thing the law don't cover.
What will you do, Father?
Well, there's just one answer left to that, Mary. I'd do anything in the world for you.
Oh,
don't worry, sweetheart. We'll see him through somehow, some way. He'll never serve another day. We can help it. And I guess we can. Oh, sure, I guess we can somewhere. Come on, buck up, old girl. Now, steady. Steady there.
Yes, Father.
Yeah. Hello. Warden talking. Find Captain Gleason and tell him to send number 23499 up to my office. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Thank you, Father.
Solitary confinement was worse than I expected. Darkness all day, all night. I never saw a living soul or heard a human voice except when Gleason came down to ask questions. And each time he tried to get me to talk, I was going crazy. And then one night, hidden in the food they brought me, I found a knife. I knew the boys had smuggled it in. I lay there in the darkness and just waited. Pretty soon I heard Gleason coming down a corridor with another guard. So I knew I was in for it.
All right, Kurt. Go in and pull him out.
Yes, sir. Come on, get up. Hurry up. I think he's sick, Captain.
Sick? He was all right an hour ago.
Maybe, but no, I think he's sick. He's unconscious.
You're nuts. Give me that flashlight. Hey, what's wrong with you? Come on now, get up. No monkey tricks. I'm on all this stuff. Get up, I say. You hear me? Get up. You may be sick at that.
Just what I thought, Captain.
I'd like to have my way for once. I'd straighten out this crook and not be wasting all my time and half my meals. Well, it doesn't do any good to gas about it. Go fetch the doctor. I'll wait here.
Yes, sir. Will I lock the door again?
No, leave it. Hurry up.
All right,
step on it now. Be quick. Can't do nothing with these mollycoddle ways. A crook's a crook. All there is about it. Spare the rod and spoil the child.
All right, Gleason.
Huh? What's that? What? No! Ah!
I killed him. Anybody would have done the same. Then I ran along the corridor. I reached the yard. I flattened myself against the wall, inching along toward the main gate. Suddenly a searchlight caught me, then another. I saw the guards on the wall, their rifles raised and aimed. Then one of them called.
Hey, pull up there, you! Don't move! I got you covered with a 30-30, Bo!
Lay off, Jack! That's the bird that drives the warden's car.
I thought they had him in the cooler.
Well, they did, but I guess they let him out. Is that you, Bob?
Yeah, it's me.
Oh, why didn't you say so? I was close to plugging you that time. Now listen, the warden's looking for you. Said you would have come right up.
Me? Okay, I'll go up.
Come in, Bob. Come in, my boy. I'm sorry for what's happened. I've done the best I could for you. For everyone. Well, your parole's come. I'm going to send you out tonight. And here's a pass to take you through the gate. My driver's waiting there. He'll take you to the station. Your clothes are in the car. Here's some money in this envelope. You go to the address that's on it and just wait there until you hear from me.
No.
Oh, sure. We'll beat him, Bob. I don't know how, but we'll beat him some way.
No. Too late.
Ah, too late. Nothing. Now, I'll see you get a break. I swear I will.
No, you can't. Not now.
What? Well, what do you mean? Why do you say that?
The warden.
Eh? What is it, Doctor?
Gleason is dead. Huh? Stabbed. Here's the knife. Shoemaker's knife, I think. I killed him.
Oh, no.
Well, what are you saying, boy?
I killed him. I didn't know, you see. I thought he was going to talk to me again. I didn't have the strength. I couldn't stand it anymore. I was afraid I might give up.
Oh, Tom.
I killed him. I'm not sorry. No one had any right to make another human being suffer as I did.
Yeah.
Father.
I can't beat this, Mary. I can't.
But you...
The guards are searching for him in the yard.
Father, there must be something you can do. There must be some way.
No, Mary. Nothing can be done now. Nothing. Well, Mary, it's just the way things break sometimes. That's the way they break.
Magnificent performance, as I think all of our listeners will agree. Meredith, suppose you lighten the tension a little with some music.
Friends, here in America, good coffee brings enjoyment to millions every single day. But that enjoyment depends not only on the coffee you use, but also on the way your coffee is made. Now, let me ask you this question. Are you sure you're getting full enjoyment from the coffee you use?
Well, frankly, I'm not. I use a high-grade coffee, watch my proportions, take care in every step. And yet, with my new drip coffee pot, I just can't seem to make the kind of coffee my husband and I enjoy. I don't know what to do about it.
Well, I'd like to make this suggestion. Buy the special drip grind Maxwell House.
Is it so important that I ask for coffee that comes specially ground for my drip coffee maker?
Vitally important, and I'll tell you why. When you make coffee correctly in a drip pot or glass coffee maker, the water passes through the coffee only once. Now, that means the coffee you use for the drip method must be ground finer and uniformly so that all its full flavor and goodness can be extracted quickly. Now, that's just why Maxwell House comes in a special drip grind, scientifically ground to give you clear, sparkling, full-flavored coffee in any type of drip or glass coffee maker. And then, if you use the percolator or boil method, you know that the water is in contact with the coffee not once, but many times. For a percolator or coffee pot, you'll find regular grind Maxwell House will stand up in the brewing and give you the same rich, full-bodied flavor that's made so many millions of friends for Maxwell House coffee. So, try a pound of the new Maxwell House tomorrow, won't you? Be sure to ask your grocer for the grind that's right for your method of making coffee. That way, you'll be sure to enjoy the extra goodness and downright satisfaction of this marvelously improved new Maxwell House. With your very first cup, you will say, there's no coffee like it.
For his concert hall presentation this evening, Meredith Wilson has prepared another daring musical experiment. Miss Gertrude Neeson will sing the lyric which Meredith has provided for Sibelius' famous Valse Triste. Well, that just about winds us up for tonight. But next week, we're going to have another grand show that I think you won't want to miss.
Excuse me, Bob.
And before... Well, here's one of our audience. Bob Montgomery.
I don't want to butt in, but this is the first chance I've had to thank you for playing my part in that preview of Fast and Loose on your program 3 weeks ago.
That was nothing, Bob. I was glad to do it.
I thought you did a swell job.
Thank you.
Incidentally, I thought the play tonight was really magnificent. I salute Mr. Barrymore... And Mr. Taylor.
Well, I imagine from what I hear, you'll have something choice for us when you come on the program next week.
Oh, now, wait a minute. I didn't come here to talk about that.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bob Montgomery is going to be our guest star next Thursday, and he's going to appear in an especially written Irish play, which he will also direct for our program. Won't you tell us something about the story, Bob?
I'd be glad to. Next Thursday.
Oh,
good night. Thank you very much.
Well, next week, Bob Montgomery plus the regular Good News gang, Fanny Bryce, Hanley Stafford, Frank Morgan, Gertrude Neeson, and Meredith Wilson. We'll all be here, and we hope that you'll be listening. In the meantime, go to the movies and take the family with you. I know you'll all want to see Wally Beery's new picture, Sergeant Madden. This is Bob Young saying good night.
This is Warren Hull saying good night and good luck for the makers of Maxwell House, the coffee that's always good to the last drop. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Your station, KFI, Los Angeles.